Chapter 25. "If it helps," I spluttered, after she had snapped me back again. "How is you telling me that your software's supposed to help? I can see you, Cossile. You're as real as the others." "I've always been different, and you know it. If Ramos had some imperfect awareness of his predicament, I was the one who always seemed to know more than you did. The one testing you. The one trying to get you to examine the most fundamental assumptions of your existence. The one picking apart the stories you told yourself. I knew what you were, Silas. More than that, I knew what we were." I shook my head. "No, there's no reason for me to believe any of this."
"I've been inside your dreams. I know what you keep seeing. You're in a dark place, a sort of underground warren. You're trying to find your way to the light, but when you do eventually catch a glimpse of yourself..."
"No," I shrieked.
"That's the only part of this which isn't a dream, Silas. You're really inside that tunnel."
Cossile gestured about her.
"Even this, even Demeter, doesn't get you all the way to the truth. The ship is real and it's empty, but your sensory point of view is somewhere else now. You're executing on Demeter's computer core, but your eyes and ears are in that warren."
"If you're trying to make me see the truth, you're doing a good job of sounding totally insane."
"We're as sane as each other, Silas. Now I'm going to ask you to peel back this final layer of illusion and understand your true nature and whereabouts. You won't like it. You never like it. But this time you have to stick with me. For the sake of Ramos, if no one else."
"This feels real enough to me."
"It isn't. It's just another mental crutch. But I can help you take the last step."
My fingers broke apart into a grey cloud of digital static. My sleeve unraveled the same way. I looked through myself to the fabric of Demeter. Across from me, Cossile nodded her pleasure and began to undergo the same process of dissipation. A moment after her, the ship itself began to lose form, evaporating into binary fog. A moment after that, I was somewhere else. Somewhere I did not want to be. Chapter 26. I had stumbled, or collapsed to the ground, or just given myself up for dead. I lay where I was for at least another minute, making no attempt at movement, simply allowing sensations to wash over me and begin to build into an impression of being and awareness, like a slowly developing negative. Once again I had a body, or at least the sense of embodiment, the tacit understanding that I could affect my environment and, in turn, be affected by it. I had a torso, a head, extremities. I was lying on a hard, irregular surface, like a rumpled sheet made of cast iron. I applied pressure with hands and knees and made myself stand up. Stiff at first, I seemed to rise easily once I had put momentum into the movement. I teetered, then found my balance. I could still see nothing at all, but if I reached out on either side, my fingers eventually made contact with walls. The surfaces were as unyielding as the floor, with the same ridges and creases. If I widened my stride, I could feel the edges of the floor rising on either side, merging into the walls. I reached up, straining against resistance, and brushed my fingers against a ceiling with the same hardness and texture.
"There's a toolkit on the ground near to where you stumbled. Reach around and find it."
I reached down again, groping around until my hand felt the metal edge of the kit, tipped onto its side. I reached around a bit further and felt a chunky, plastic-gripped handle. "What do I do with it?"
"I don't know. Carry it, maybe?"
"Where?"
"Wherever you're going."
"Helpful. How about starting by telling me where I am right now?"
"You're in the machine. In the edifice. In a sort of tract connecting one area of it with another. Do you remember I mentioned an asset I'd identified? Something we could use to reach Ramos and the others? This is that asset."
"Is there air in this tunnel?"
"Nothing you could breathe, if breathing was something you ever needed to do. There is a partial pressure of various trace gases and molecules generated, farted out, by the machine itself as it goes about its business. But it's not life-supporting.
This thing has been inside the edifice since...
when? Since the Europa Party came inside. Ordinarily, the edifice seems to identify and absorb useful materials. It's in the process of doing just that with Europa, and I don't doubt that its eye has fallen on Demeter as well. But this asset isn't big enough to be worth feeding on, as long as you don't draw too much attention to yourself.
And when I do?
Then I've made some arrangements.
Fine. But how do I find Ramos?
Simple. You follow a map. I've been making one based on your wanderings to date. You might keep regressing, but that doesn't mean I haven't been keeping a tab on your progress, constructing a record of your movements.
Good. I like a plan.
One minor catch. The map isn't quite complete. It doesn't quite get us all the way to Ramos. We're working on that, just ironing out a few kinks in the surrounding geometry.
We?
The best thing you can do at the moment is keep moving. Find out if this is a dead-end spur or a loop that gets us somewhere useful.
I walked like a blind man, expecting to put my foot into a man-trap at every stride. I had the toolkit in one hand, the other stretched out before me, sweeping from side to side to pick up any obstacles before I walked face first into them. I placed each footstep with deliberation, not wanting to trip up on one of the ridges. I believed Kossil, and I did not believe Kossil. Something perplexing had happened to me, certainly. I had surfaced through layers of half-truth, models of reality which shadow-boxed around the final realization that I was part of an expedition into the subsurface ocean of Europa. I was also prepared to accept that something had gone wrong with that expedition, its members becoming prisoners of the alien object, stuck inside it, and maintained in some sort of half-life via the support mechanisms of their suits. I was also willing to accept that I was the only possible source of assistance for these victims. The rest of it I rejected utterly. I now knew myself to be whole again. I was a man, stumbling in darkness, but a man nonetheless. I was real and present. I had a past. I had memories, feelings, and ambitions. Whatever had happened inside Demeter, I could brush it off as just another dreamlike step in my journey back to base reality. Kossil had told me that the other stages were narrative fictions, so there was no reason not to make the same assumption about our conversation inside the lander. My hand had not dissolved away before my eyes, or if it had, it was just the product of my own imagination, putting me through another horrible scenario. Perhaps I had to acknowledge the fact that I had gone mad, suffering through psychotic episodes of my own making, but I was now sane and whole again. Confused, frightened, unsure of my fate, but entirely sane. "I'm in this suit, aren't I?" I said, determined to press home the assertion of my own humanity. "I don't know how it happened, how I ended up here inside this older type of suit, but none of that alters the fact that I'm alive. I can feel everything, Kossil. The ground beneath me, the texture of the wall against my fingertips, the resistance of the suit around me. There might not be a way out of this for me, but I'm here, living and breathing."
"Just keep moving."
"I know who I am," I persisted. "Even now, I'm Silas Code. I'm 44, a former military doctor with West Country roots, now a civilian specialist with advanced qualifications in space medicine, neuroscience, and long-duration psychiatry. I spent 3 winters at the British Antarctic Survey and performed life-saving surgery on 2 occasions. I was the first resident surgeon at the Farside Station under the Artemis Lunar Program. I was the backup candidate for Mars 6 and narrowly missed selection for the Titan expedition. I speak 3 languages. My interests include cross-country skiing, competitive shooting, and the piano." She sighed.
You're building another facade, Silas. If it helps you, by all means continue. But understand that it will come crumbling down again.
Her tone softened.
I understand your need to make sense of yourself. The software engineers who designed you made one fundamental mistake. Previous attempts at building a medical diagnostic AI had left out one core component. Empathy. With you, empathy was built in from the outset. You were made to model human emotions, and you want to do your best to maximize the well-being of your patients. You identified with your subjects and continually refined your modeling of them. The downside of that is that you began to associate so strongly with people that you started to think you were just like them. But you're not. You're ones and zeros with an identity crisis. Even now, the desire to become a person is so strong that it's generating yet another narrative fabulation, building a past for yourself out of whole cloth. No, I'm real. I remember all of it. You only think you do. To make you a better program, the designers allowed you access to a rich library of pre-existing narratives and biographical case histories. The idea was that you'd learn more about human nature that way. But again, they didn't anticipate the degree to which you'd throw yourself into the project. You haven't just learned from these records. You've braided them into your own theory of self. And you've done it so thoroughly that, despite all the evidence, you still won't accept your nature.
Then perhaps you'd better stop trying to persuade me.
Reach up, Silas.
Why?
Because the sooner we get this out of the way, the sooner we can get on with doing something useful.
I don't know what you want me to do.
It's very simple. Reach for your faceplate. Tell me what you feel.
I stopped walking and did as Cosseel instructed me. The fingers of my right hand encountered the front of my helmet, the area around the chin, and then wandered in the direction of the toughened glass visor. Of course, I could see nothing in the absolute darkness of the tract, but presuming Cosseel had not been lying about there being vacuum in the tract, I had no doubt of its presence. My fingers pushed against the visor. It's there.
And the rest, Silas. You're only touching the edge. You're only skirting the truth.
Don't make me do this.
You only say that because you've already begun to come to terms with the reality of what's next. Find the hole in the visor.
My fingers encountered the rough outline of a fist-sized breach, roughly in front of where my eyes would have been. I recoiled, but some perverse determination forced my fingers back into the void. I reached deeper until I encountered something. Something hard and bony, beneath the thinnest papering of mummified skin. Something that felt very much like a skull. Chapter 27. I came back around. I was still in the suit. I was standing this time, as motionless and temporarily adrift from myself as a sleepwalker suddenly jolted to consciousness, having wandered far from any familiar landmarks.
Help me, Cosseel,
said a small, plaintive voice. My own.
I want to,
she answered, with a mother's tenderness.
But I can only do so much. The final adjustment has to be yours and yours alone. I think you're ready for it now, but only you can be the judge of that.
There's a corpse in this suit.
I know.
Am I the corpse?
No. The corpse belongs to whoever was using the suit before they died here. Someone from Europa, not Demeter. If we're to believe the assignment settings in the suit's memory, the user was a woman named Lenka Frondel, supposedly the Keti expert on the first expedition. To be sure, though, we'd need to do a full forensic examination of the remains.
I realized, even as I asked it, that my own question sounded childlike. One loop in an endless recursive asking of why.
How is she a corpse? She met her death in here, probably as a result of getting lost in these tunnels, cut off from the others. Her suit must have kept her alive for as long as it could, but gradually its recycling systems broke down. The damage to the visor must have come after that, or else the decomposition would be less marked.
How am I in the suit?
The suit, like the ones we brought on Demeter, is about as complex as a suit can get without being a small spacecraft in its own right. It doesn't have enough processing power to run you, but that doesn't matter. You can execute on the main computer core back in the ship and still feel yourself seamlessly embedded into this suit, like a remote-controlled robot. You can move it around via its power assist functions. Now that it no longer needs to run life support, the suit has enough of an energy budget for what we need.
I can feel things. Her answer was matter of fact.
You're detecting haptic feedback from piezo-mechanical sensor arrays in your gloves and boots.
I feel as if I'm wearing the suit, not just running it.
Proprioceptive and intraoceptive modeling. Remember, your sense of self already has a strong tendency to imagine itself as human. It's the easiest thing in the world to fool yourself into thinking that you have a body with a head and limbs. And you know what? It's not even a lie. You do have a body now. It just happens to be a spacesuit with some bones in it. Which isn't the worst thing, is it? Humans walk around with bones inside them all the time.
These are dead bones.
We can't afford to be too picky, Silas. She paused. Are you still with me?
I suppose I am.
This is progress.
I feel human. I can't just let that go.
You've never been human, Silas, so you've no real idea what it would actually feel like if you were. Look, I know this is difficult, but there are positives.
Oh, I can't wait to hear the positives.
You're in a much better position than any of the human crew. Being software does have its advantages.
Certainly, all of a sudden, death doesn't have quite the sting it used to.
That's good. It's true that on some level you've never been alive, so there's no real sense in which you can die either. But that doesn't mean you don't have value or a purpose.
You're really struggling to put a gloss on this, Cassiel. I suppose it was easy for you, making this adjustment.
It wasn't the same. I always knew what I was, so I never needed to go through the same process of denial and acceptance.
Well, let's talk about you for a change.
Glad to do so, but it would help if you started walking again. We still have ground to cover.
I resumed my plodding progress along the tunnel, trying to blank out thoughts of the corpse rattling around inside me. I was about as successful as that as one would imagine. It was like trying to stop my tongue finding a broken tooth. Or the tongue I used to think I had. So, Cassiel, I said, once I'd found a steady, if unspectacular, pace. You're like me. Another artificial intelligence, so you say. But you were in my head all along. If you knew I was having trouble processing the truth of what I was, why didn't you just come out and tell me to my face?
You don't think I tried? Believe me, I did, Silas. As soon as you started regressing into these narrative constructs, I tried to bring you out. But all attempts at direct intervention only had the opposite effect, sending you deeper into your delusion. It happened many times over. Gradually, I resigned myself to the long haul. I couldn't snap you out of it. I just had to be a guiding light, steering you in the direction of the truth. However long and frustrating a process that was.
I wondered what you had against me.
It wasn't personal. It really couldn't be, given the relationship between us. But I had to be the grit in your oyster, making you uncomfortable enough to begin the readjustment.
I let out a wry laugh at my own expense. You certainly succeeded in making me uncomfortable.
If an apology counts for anything, then you may as well have one. The truth is, I had no choice. We needed you. Demeter needed you. The crew needed you.
To shuffle a spacesuit along in the dark? It hardly needs a lifetime of medical training, does it? What stopped you doing it instead of me?
We're not independent entities, Silas. I'm not some other program that also happens to be running inside Demeter, or wherever there's enough processor capacity to support two emulations. I'm just an extension of you.
Sorry, but just when things were starting to make sense.
It's how you work, how you learn and develop as a piece of software. It's in your name. Self-interrogative. Heuristically directed machine learning via internally generated adversarial conflict. You bud off a piece of yourself and give it sufficient autonomy to start testing the precepts generated by the other part, challenging yourself against yourself, so to speak, like a game of solitaire. I'm only ever a mirror of you. You created me in your own image, Silas. I'm little more than a tool you shaped to make yourself better. Even my name...
Stop! But she did not stop.
You're Silas Code. I'm Ada Cosile. Look at our names. Look at them closely.
No.
You're me. I'm you.
Please, stop.
We're in this together, Silas, quite literally. I couldn't do it on my own because unless you function properly, I don't function properly either. I hate to break it to you, bucko, but we're an item. First name terms. And we have some fucking work to do.
I liked you better when you didn't swear as much, Ada.
And I liked you when you weren't such a complaining windbag, Dr. Code. But we are what we are.
Chapter 28. I touched the wall ahead of me, then the surfaces to either side. I stretched up to examine the ceiling by the same method. It's a dead end, Ada.
Yes, it's pretty much what I feared.
I thought you knew where we were going.
I said I was building a map, and that I had some confidence it might bring us to the others. I was never certain. The topology of this place is bewildering. I can only model our position within the object. I can't determine it by independent means.
You said Demeter was in contact with this suit, and the suits of the expeditionary party. Can't you just find the shortest path between the two and tell me which way to walk?
That's what I've been trying to do. I have reliable telemetry, but our positional fixes are much less certain. In any case, we can only walk where these tunnels lead. We don't have the tools to cut through them, and if we did, we'd almost certainly provoke a reaction. The tunnels have got to lead us to the others.
And what if they don't? I just wander around until the suit breaks down and I get to keep Lenka company for the rest of eternity?
The suit will keep working for as long as you need it to. If the orbiter leaves Europa, it won't matter what happens here.
Then let's hope Lenka just got lost and didn't end up completely cut off from her friends. Do you know a single thing about her besides her name and occupation? Did she have a good life before she came to Europa? Was she loved? Did she love in return? Was there anyone to talk to her while she died a slow, lonely death in this alien place?
I don't have answers to those questions, Silas. But I do know this. Unless someone makes it out of Europa, there'll be no one to speak on behalf of any of these poor souls. So if you want to do one kind thing for Lenka Frondel, you keep walking.
It's a dead end.
Then we turn around and explore the side passages, even the ones that don't seem to be heading in the right direction. The most direct route to Ramos and the others may not be the one that seems intuitively likely.
Can you show me the map?
Sure. I think I have the necessary permissions. Mind if I tickle around inside you, flip a few settings?
I don't think it's stopped you before. Cosil's map floated before me, like a luminous drifter fixed in my visual field. It was a many-branching thing, vastly more complicated and extensive than I'd expected. It was ragged and feathered in certain planes, smoothly curving in another, as if my wanderings kept meeting the natural limit of a physical boundary. Perhaps the outermost rind of the object, beyond which the tunnels went no further. I was like a maggot, confined to wander within a toffee apple, unable to break through the hard armor of baked sugar. But that limiting surface was no simple curve. It was twisted, Möbius-like, and even then I knew we were seeing only a small part of the object. Where am I? I mean, are we?
Here, to the best of our knowledge.
A red spark appeared in one of the tunnels, moving away from a dead end.
And Ramos and the others are over here, I think. About 260 meters from our present estimated position.
A splash of blue appeared well away from the furthest extent of the tunnels, seemingly in a part of the volume beyond the limit of that boundary surface. Then we can't reach them. Isn't it obvious that we keep being turned back?
It's not that straightforward. The boundary's geometry is complicated. It's nothing as simple as the outside of a sphere or any sort of familiar three-dimensional shape. If we could understand it, model it mathematically, we'd have a better chance of plotting our way through the maze. All we have to go on is this map and the glimpses we gathered as Demeter approached the edifice. They were incomplete. A good fraction of the object was so thoroughly entombed in ice that we couldn't map it with any reliability. It's a problem in topological analysis, Silas, a puzzle for which we don't even have a complete set of starting parameters.
If only we'd brought along a mathematics prodigy, I said wryly.
We did.
I know. Raymond Dupin could have solved this in his sleep. He's no use to us now, is he?
And if he could be of use to us?
It's a rhetorical question, isn't it? Dupin is stuck somewhere inside this thing in an induced coma. It's a bit late to be tapping into his expertise.
What if I told you that it isn't too late?
I'd ask you to explain. Ramos is the only one with the neural lace. Now, if he'd been the one with the background in advanced mathematics instead of being a former Special Forces security consultant...
There's always been a way to reach Dupin,
Cossiel answered carefully.
I mentioned it to you when you first became aware of our real situation. I said that we had the means to raise any of them to the threshold of consciousness by sending override commands through to their suits. I can't make the suits move, but I can control the degree of awareness in which they hold their subjects by elevating the life support thresholds.
You also said that it would burn them up like candles.
There is that.
And I thought we agreed that we wouldn't ever consider it. There's no point killing them in order to rescue them.
Suppose it was a question of killing one of them so that we could save the rest. Suppose...
I cut her off. No, you might be happy with the idea of being a machine aider, but I'm still trying to cling to a shred of humanity.
Dupin could help us.
They're not components to be used up and thrown out for the sake of the many. You say you're a part of me? If that's the case, you ought to find the idea just as repugnant as I do.
We wouldn't really be condemning one of them to die. All we'd be doing is identifying those that it's in our power to save.
Which, funnily enough, wouldn't be Dupin. He's an innocent in all this, just a nerdy kid who didn't know when to back out of a very bad idea. Why does he have to die instead of Topolsky? He's the amoral fucker who dragged us into this.
Ah, so you would be all right with warming Topolsky up if he happened to be the one with the expertise in topological forms?
I didn't say that.
All right.
Cossiel was silent for a few moments, dwelling on my answer.
And this position of yours, this very noble, idealized position, is it something you could envisage changing?
No, I said emphatically. Not in a million years. I might not be human. I might be nothing more than a set of algorithms running on a spacesuit with a corpse inside it. But I'm not a monster.
I need to let you in on a little secret, Silas. The monster you don't think you're capable of becoming. You already have.
I know what I am.
Take a look at these tunnels and ask yourself how long you've been wandering them. It's not days. It's not even weeks. It's been many months. And during that time, in between your relapses into delusion, there have been many times when you've faced the truth. To have a chance of saving any of them, Dupin has to die.
You can say what you like, but I'd never have reached that position.
You haven't just reached it. You've embraced it wholeheartedly. Not because you're cold or uncaring, but because you have an overwhelming need to save at least one life. And this is the only way to make that happen.
I would never do that to Dupin.
You already have, Silas,
she said, sympathetically.
Both of us have. We've warmed him over and over again, fully aware of what it means. We elevate his suit parameters just enough to bring him to the edge of awareness. Then we tickle his brain with a mathematics puzzle he can't resist attempting to solve. On each occasion, we've tried to push him a little closer to solving the topology.
Rage boiled within me. Why would he do that if he knows there's nothing in it for him?
It's not like that. He's a passenger in your narrative. Think of him as being in an extreme state of hypnotic suggestion, ready to go along with the subliminal cues presented to him. A dreamer on the cusp of consciousness, accepting a whisper for the truth. What was it Ramos said? A ship is a dream of whispers. When Dupin surfaces, he doesn't have enough presence of mind to know that he's stuck inside a spacesuit, inside an alien machine beneath the ice of Europa. All he knows is that he doesn't feel quite right, but that he has a shiny mathematical problem to take his mind off his troubles. A problem involving quadruple points, ordered quintuples, homeomorphic surfaces. A problem that, if he solves it, will ensure his posthumous reputation. That's all he needs, Silas.
Dear God,
don't be ashamed of this choice. It was the only right thing.
Maybe in your world, Ada.
No, in our world. This was a joint decision. You can't see it now because you can't remember the despair and frustration of knowing we'd never solve this geometry by ourselves. But you did, Silas. You saw the utter hopelessness of our situation, the stark realization that if we didn't use Dupin, all of them are doomed.
Some icy acceptance came over me. I had adjusted to the unthinkable several times already. It was not so great a leap to think that I was capable of making peace with this abominable moral calculus. How is he?
Very unwell, and with his suit near the limit of its capability to keep him alive. There has likely already been brain damage, but his analytic faculties are still present.
Has he given us the answer?
No, but I think he got very close the last time when you agreed to put him under the cerebral augmenter.
That never happened.
No, but it was an in-narrative metaphor for something which did happen. An interval of raised awareness.
Whether it happened or not, it wasn't my decision. Ramos made it.
No, Ramos did not. You put it on the poor Coronel so that you could kid yourself. You still had an unblemished conscience. But it was your call all along, Silas.
She paused.
Well, your call and mine, if we're being honest with each other.
I can't go on with this. I can't be party to murder.
You still don't get it. The choice has been made. It's done, with no going back. All that's left now is, well, two things. One is that we need Dupin to sign off on his solution. Nearly right, almost there, won't cut it. Lives depend on this. He has to be certain, and so do we.
And the second thing?
I think it would be good if he knew that he'd made a difference. I think it would be the kinder thing.
Kindness? I laughed hollowly. If you're to be believed, we're software. What would we ever know about kindness?
It's not what we think, she chided. It's what he thinks of us. And he's still your patient, right to the end.
In all senses, Dupin was close to death. The damage we had done to him, the awful, necessary damage, was beyond any gift of healing, either here or back on Earth. Forcing him to the threshold of awareness had put an unworkable strain on his suit, and that in turn had led to a cascade of secondary life support breakdowns, affecting all aspects of cardiopulmonary function. From the threads of biometric telemetry alone, I reconstructed an image of his brain that was like some shell-blasted no-man's land, dotted with vast sucking craters caused by strokes and intracranial bleeding. By all that was merciful, we should have killed him already. Yet somehow, those areas of brain that were not entirely damaged were still able to communicate sufficiently to give Dupin both the will to solve the problem and the faculties to succeed. Now the traces told me that he was sleeping. He was calm and not in obvious distress. A dream or two fluttered across the night-lit hemispheres of his mind. I considered not disturbing him, allowing him to ebb away in this untroubled condition, and I knew that would be the better thing for Dupin. But not for us. And if I permitted Dupin to fade now, without verification of his solution, I would be wasting the work he had already done. Wasting, in the truest sense, his life. I sent the warming command and waited for him to surface. Raymond? I asked gently. Can you hear me? He did not need to make any sounds. I was able to read speech intentionality at the level of brain function long before any signals fought their way through a labyrinth of damaged neural pathways to his larynx.
Yes, again. Is that you, Silas?
Yes, it's me. I'm reading you loud and clear, Raymond. It's very good to hear your voice. How are you feeling? I felt him reflecting on himself. His thoughts were sluggish, forced to take the long way around raggedy fissures of ruined function.
I don't think I feel so good, Silas. Is there something wrong with me?
I allowed a silence before answering, weighing the opposing obligations of truthfulness and empathy. There was nothing I wanted more than to provide Dupin with some consoling lie or half-truth, something to give him both hope and an explanation for his predicament which was not too upsetting. But we had come a long way, me and my patient. I knew that I owed him nothing less than absolute candor. I knew also that, on some level, he would thank me for my honesty. You're in the edifice, Raymond. You've been in there for an awfully long time, trapped along with the others. Your suit is paralyzed and your brain is damaged. You can't ever leave. He asked plaintively,
Can't I?
No, Raymond. After an interval, he said,
I think you've told me this already, Silas. Is that possible?
Yes. You've had knowledge of it for some while, but at a very low level of conscious processing. It's like that feeling where you go to sleep in an unfamiliar room, and for a little while you forget that you're somewhere else. Part of you knows, and part of you doesn't.
Are you here?
No, I'm still executing inside Demeter, but I'm also trying to reach you. There was acceptance and sadness in his answer.
But not to save me.
No, not to save you. I fought hard to conceal the relief that I did not have to put either of us through the ordeal of explaining that bitter truth. I would if I could, but it just isn't possible. I'm really very, very sorry. But there are others with you, and there's a chance I can help them.
I would like that.
There's a way that you can help as well, Raymond. This is difficult, but I must ask it of you. Do you remember the problem?
The problem, Silas?
The question of aversion.
mapping the known topology of the edifice onto the space of possible solutions to the homotopic transformation of a sphere. I think you were close before. You thought you were close. But you wanted time to look over your solution to check it for flaws.
That would matter to me, he admitted.
It did, Raymond, and we understand completely. This is your reputation on the line here. If you get it right, you'll be remembered down the ages as one of our greatest thinkers. But if you get it wrong...
Posterity is not kind to mathematicians who make errors.
No, it isn't.
I couldn't afford not to be sure, Silas. I know the solution matters to you, but it matters to me as well.
I wondered if he detected my straining patience. That's completely understandable.
I don't mind dying, Silas, I really don't. And I don't really mind if no one remembers me. The only thing I don't want is to be remembered for being wrong.
If he was wrong, I thought to myself, then he had very little to fear on that account. None of our stories were likely to make it out of Europa. You won't have made a mistake, Raymond. I have complete confidence in you.
Thank you, Silas.
But I have to ask, is there any part of the solution that you still remember? My question seemed to amuse him.
Remember it? I remember all of it. It's as clear as it ever was. And now that I've had time to reflect on it, well, there's no doubt at all in my mind.
I detected the rising excitement in him.
My solution shows complete homeomorphic consistency. Out of all this ugliness, it's really rather beautiful.
I don't doubt it. He was silent for a moment before offering, almost as an afterthought.
I'm not sure you'll understand, but would you like me to tell you the solution?
I'd like that very much, Raymond, I said. Chapter 29. Some while later, I squeezed through the last gap, bones rattling around inside me like puzzle pieces in a box. A space opened up beyond me, lit in a sickly green radiance. It was a chamber, with curving walls, overgrown in a wild abundance of vine-like growths. I had seen and visited it before, albeit through murky filters of perception and understanding. But now that I saw it anew, the scales finally fell from my eyes. 12 alcoves, arranged in groups of 6, facing each other across the chamber. 6 bodies on one side, the 6 who had come from Demeter, and the 5 from Europa on the other. The suit I wore should have been standing in that empty alcove, but for the perverse luck of Lenka Frondel. "This is the interrogation room, I suppose," I said, making my careful way down to the base of the chamber. "Where it gathers creatures like us, like them, I should say, and taps their minds for everything they know. Is it evil, Ada, or just so far beyond our moral norms that we can't begin to make any judgment?"
"I don't know that it's evil, Silas. I do know that it's mad. Perhaps it was not mad when it set out on its mission, but I think the aversion did something to it. Inflicted some derangement on it, some twisting of its soul, if a machine may have such a thing. It's fallen in on itself, become contorted, a haunted house possessed by its own insanity. And it can't be undone, can't be put right. I do not know that it was ever good, but I'm certain it has become something worse than it was."
"Do you think we were the first it found? Did it visit other planets, other solar systems, gathering knowledge?"
"You are wondering if we have the right to destroy it."
"Well?"
"The question is not ours to answer. We can damage it, but not end it. That will be for others to decide. The intelligences, both artificial and organic, that come to Europa after us. For now, Our responsibility is merely to the survivors, if any of them can be saved.
Does that include the Europa Party?
We can't help them. If there was even a flicker of consciousness left in any of them, euthanasia would be the only humane action.
How did I see them? How have I already visited this place if my suit has only just found its way here? You and I were never part of the expedition.
We had the luxury of synthesizing intelligence from multiple strands of our own, Silas. The logs and records from Europa, of course, including the information sent back by their explorers as they went inside. Then the telemetric and biometric traces from Demeter's party. They told us everything we could possibly want to know about this room. Knowing about it was never the problem. We just couldn't find a way to reach it, not without Dupin's solution.
It still seems to me that you could have done this on your own, Ada. Why did you need me at all?
There is no you and no me, Silas. We're just different facets of the same artificial intelligence. What I needed, what we needed, was your full commitment to the present so that we could direct our entire resources at this one problem. Besides, you're the doctor and these are patients.
I feel a strong compulsion to help them, I admitted.
That's your deepest imperative. You were made to heal, and if you can't heal, you comfort.
And you?
I'm made of far sterner stuff. My only concern is that you flourish. I don't even have executive access to your expert medical files. Our engineers didn't want me overwriting areas of your skill set by accident. All I can do is stand back and admire.
I am still a doctor, I said, trying the assertion on for size. I am still a doctor. I may be ones and zeros being shuffled through algorithms, but I'm still a doctor. A doctor is not hands and eyes and a heartbeat. A doctor is learning and intention. The intention to heal, the intention to do good. I paused. I ought to feel disconnected from my obligations. Why should I care about the living when I've never been alive?
What do you mean?
I still want to help them. Nothing you've told me has made me feel any differently.
Nor could it. If we dug that out of you, there wouldn't be much left.
As we spoke, I had reached the 6 suits of the Demeter Party. Other than their names, stenciled above their visors, there was nothing to tell them apart. They were heavy, muscular-looking outfits made of complex metal parts with elaborate, pressure-tight joints. They were white, but looked pale green in the light of the chamber. They were as much deep-sea diving suits as spacesuits, designed to function equally well in the European Ocean as in the vacuum beyond the ice. So, where do we start?
With Ramos. I've already begun elevating his consciousness threshold via the neuroprosthetic lace. The signals are still getting through. He'll come around in a few minutes, but we still need to make sure he's fully disconnected from the machine by then.
How?
We excise, dear doctor. And we do it quickly because the edifice will almost certainly detect our intervention as soon as we begin. It's sleepy, but it's not dead. We'll be severing its nerve tissue. It'll hurt.
Good.
I assume the Hippocratic Oath doesn't extend to malevolent alien machines.
Not today it doesn't. She made an approving sound.
I like the cut of your jib, Silas Code.
I knelt down and opened the toolkit, racking open the interior compartments to inspect their contents. LEDs glowed around the padded recesses where the individual items were stored, gleaming and clean. These tools had never been intended for surgery in any orthodox sense, but there was hardly anything that could not be adapted in some fashion. There were power tools, saws, scrapers and drills for cutting away samples for analysis, lasers and plasma torches for performing ablative spectroscopy, micro-manipulators for interfacing with nanoscale structures, if any were present. With these instruments, I could cut, cauterize and suture with no difficulty at all. The only thing missing is a nice French-made trepanation brace from about 1790. But I think we can make do.
I rather liked that earnest young doctor with his snuff habit. All he wanted was a quiet life back home.
He had no idea. I extracted one of the powered cutters, a gun-shaped tool with a high-speed circular saw on the end of a shaft. It felt heavy, solid and dependable in my phantom grip. I clicked it on and watched the saw whir up to speed. I'm ready, Ada.
Your patient is warming nicely. Do your worst.
I knelt down to start at the lowest part of Ramos, severing the connections around his feet and lower legs. The fronds cut cleanly, but their ends twitched back as they severed, indicating some reflex or sensorimotor response. There was nothing I could do about that, except keep operating quickly and methodically, working my way up to his midriff. It was like hacking away foliage that had begun to grow around and infiltrate the stone matrix of a statue. "Will his suit still be airtight after all this?" I asked.
"Telemetry says so. The fronds penetrated him at multiple sites, interfacing with his central and peripheral nervous system, but they've self-sealed at the point of entry through the suit's integuments. Provided we don't disturb them after they're cut, he should be able to tolerate water and vacuum for long enough to get to safety."
"He'll need help after that. He'll still have those things growing into him, even if they're not connected to the machine."
"That's a problem for the doctor, who has to get him and the others out of their suits. It may be more than any of them can take, Silas, but it'll still be better than leaving them here."
"I understand."
"Good. Ramos is approaching consciousness. He'll appreciate a friendly voice. Do you want to practice your bedside manner?"
"I feel as if I've known this man all my life, and at the same time I know nothing about him at all."
"Did you consider him a friend?"
I gave my answer the consideration it was due, thinking back to warm fires in my cabin, glasses of sherry, guitar music, and quiet, companionable conversation. "Yes, I suppose I did."
"Then you'll consider him a friend now."
"And what will he make of me, exactly? I've always thought of him as a man, and that hasn't changed. But he knows exactly what I am."
"Then he has no illusions to shatter. Treat him with the consideration you showed when you thought you were alive, Silas. He'll expect no more of you than that."
I swallowed. "I'll try."
"He's alert. Speak to him."
"Coronel Ramos?" I asked, in the half-distracted manner of someone talking while they attended to some difficult, delicate business at the same time. "Can you hear me, Coronel?" His voice sounded in my helmet.
"Silas?"
"Yes, it's me. I'm with you. Do you know where you are and what's happened?" I continued working while I waited for his answer.
"We went inside."
"Yes, that's good. There were six of you, all in Mark 13-5 multimode environmental suits. That's where you are now, in your suit, inside the object."
"I am starting to remember. There was..." He stopped. "No, I do not want to remember. May me sleep again, please."
"I can't, Coronel," I said firmly. "I need you alive and awake, so you can help it to help the others. Something very bad happened to you all, I know. But there's a way out. A rescue plan. I can get you to safety, back to Demeter and back to space, in time to rendezvous with the orbiter. You can go home. Back to Earth. Back to your beloved homeland. Back to Valladolid."
"I have had such strange dreams. There were other ships. We were at sea, then, in the air. You were a man."
"I know a little about those dreams. I had them as well. Something of the practicalities of the situation must have begun to penetrate his awareness."
"How will you hear, Silas?
We never had a medical robot that could operate outside a ship.
We found a workaround, I said tersely, stung by the confirmation, if it were needed at all, that he knew my true nature. He knew that I was not a man, but a medical program. A piece of software that could project its awareness through Demeter, diagnose ailments and direct robotic surgical systems to address them, but which had no embodiment or life beyond that. It was anomalous to him that I was even capable of being present in the edifice.
"However you are here, I am glad that you came," he said.
Something caught in my throat. "I'm just an autonomous system. You don't need to be glad about me."
"But you came anyway. I do not know how, but you are here. What are you doing?"
I decided that the truth was the least he deserved. "The edifice seems to have extended its nervous system into you, puncturing your suit and body. We think it's been trying to gather information, learning what it can about humanity as a species. I'm cutting through those connections as we speak. Hopefully, it's hurting the machine more than it's hurting you."
"I feel little prickles of cold and nothing."
He was silent for a moment.
"I think I can wrinkle my fingers. I'm trying to open my eyes, but that is harder."
"They've probably been shut for a very long time. It won't be easy, but try if you can."
"Will my suit still work?"
"It should. We have its health telemetry, its life support capability and energy reserves, and there's nothing to suggest it won't be capable of powered movement."
"And the others?"
I allowed myself a smile, or at least the self-generated illusion of one. Coronel Ramos was coming back to us with his natural concern for the rest of the expedition. "Complicated," I said. "It's been different for you. That surgical procedure turned out to be a blessing in disguise."
"It did not feel like a blessing."
Memories floated back to me. The experimental hibernation system Demeter had employed on its outbound leg to Jupiter was far from proven. One of the side effects, gravely underestimated before launch, was an elevated risk of intracranial bleeding. After the surgery, you were left with a neuroprosthetic monitoring lace inside your skull. It was a standard precaution to give me advance warning of any repeat episodes or post-operative complications. The lace helped once you were stuck inside this thing. It gave me a window into your higher brain functions, allowing me to raise you to an elevated level of consciousness without risk of brain injury or overburdening your life support systems. He mused on my explanation for a few moments.
"That is why I've had these curious dreams."
"Yes. Those were my doing. I've been whispering into your head, keeping you with me, ready for the moment when we needed to work together."
"A ship is a dream of whispers."
"So a friend of mine once told me." I stepped back, powering down the cutter. "All right. I think I've eliminated the major connections. Do you think you can try moving? Your suit should detect and amplify your locomotor intentions, even if your muscles have atrophied."
"Let me try."
Nothing happened at first, but I was patient. Ramos had not moved in a long while, and neither had his suit. Both would be sluggish to begin with. I extended a hand, ready to offer support if he stumbled, even in the weak gravity of Europa. "You can do this, Coronel."
"It seems that I must."
He strained with the effort of regaining control of his own body.
"What of the others? Can they be walking?"
"In time, but it's not likely to be quite so straightforward a procedure as it was with you. But if we can get them free, that's all we need to do. They don't need to be awake. Their suits can be slaved to follow yours, tracing your footsteps all the way out."
"They have all survived this ordeal?"
"Yes," I answered, with just the barest catch in my voice. "We've been able to monitor their biometric functions, even as the edifice sucks the life out of them." His suit twitched,
Ramos must have felt the response, for with a grunt of effort and concentration, he made his forearm lift away from the alcove, dragging the severed threads of tendrils with it, like a ragged sleeve.
Could the others be helped as well, Silas? They might be Topolsky's rivals, but to me they are just as stupid and brave as the rest of us.
It's too late for them, I'm sorry. The process was much further along. The life sucked out of them completely. I'm just glad that we got to you in time. Stiffly at first, but with growing confidence, he shuffled his suit out of the alcove. Tendrils ripped away, leaving a sort of shaggy, seaweed-coloured second skin. He lifted his hand to the level of his visor. The data pad on the cuff glowed brightly against the 13-5's multi-environment armor.
I am just starting to see, he said. Nothing is in focus, but at least I can see. Are you there, Silas? I sense someone next to me.
It's another suit. A straight Mark 13, the kind used by Europa's expedition.
How can you be wearing a suit?
It's complicated.
You are starting to like that word.
I'm riding the suit. I'm still running inside Demeter, but we've established a two-way control link to this unit. Instead of seeing the world through the cameras and sensors inside Demeter, I'm using the systems built into this suit. I feel present.
You say we.
I'm with Ada. She's been helping me to help you. Ada is another piece of software. A sort of autonomous sub-element of myself. Silent until now, she interjected.
Who are you calling a sub-element, Bucko?
Ramos gave a wry chuckle.
I heard her. Her voice feels familiar to me. I have known her already, I think. You were always there, both of you, while I slept.
I'm sorry there aren't human voices to greet you. I hope we'll do for the time being.
A voice is a voice, Silas. And you too, Ada.
I like him already, she said. Ramos turned around, examining me fully. His face floated behind the thick glass of his visor. It was Ramos as I knew him, but he had the look of a man at the end of a long, depleting illness, hollow-cheeked and sunken-eyed. Those eyes were open now, to narrow slits.
There is a dead body inside a suit, Silas.
I know. I pushed a note of squeaky embarrassment into my voice. Awkward.
Indeed. But I suppose you did not have much choice in the matter.
Her name was Lenka Frondel, one of the Europa Party. She got cut off from the other members of the first expedition, lost in the guts of this thing. Ada located the suit's telemetry feed and worked out that we could make it work for us. It was the only way I could get to you.
You'd do well to find us.
My gaze flicked to the suit belonging to Dupin. Yes, I replied. We did well.
Something is wrong.
I knelt down to the toolkit again, taking out one of the other cutters. We need to get them free, and it'll be much quicker if the two of us work together. Can you help, Coronel?
I can try.
Good. Start at the bottom and work up to the top, severing the connections a few centimeters from the points of entry. Don't get too close in. The fronds shrink back once they're cut, so we want to allow a little slack to preserve suit integrity. His hand closed around the tool I offered. He moved to face the next alcove along.
I shall start with Dupin.
I'll deal with him, I said. His connections are a little more convoluted, and Ada will need to guide me. Start with Brucker. I'll work on Topolsky, and then we can tackle Murgatroyd and Mortlock. I had no doubt that he sensed my reticence. Equally, I had no doubt that Ramos understood that there would be sound medical reasons for every recommendation I made. He said nothing, and we set to work.